Hello everyone, happy November 5th to any Brits who may be listening, and welcome to the Active Podcast, a bi-weekly program dedicated to bringing you closer to the difference makers in CDI, and also to sharing the latest news relevant to the CDI profession and to your association, ACTIS. My name is Rebecca Hendren, I am the Director of ACTIS, and I am your host for today's show. Later, I'm going to be joined by several members of the ACTIS team, including Linnea Archibald, who is our Associate Editorial Director of Membership and Publications, Carla Kozak, who is our Editorial Manager of Events and Products, and Jess Flegel, who's the ACTIS editor who writes our CDI journal. We're going to discuss several ACTIS updates. But first, I wanted to let you know that the main feature of today's show is a discussion with Lynette Biley, BSN, RN, CCDS, CCS, and we are going to focus on problem list sequencing. So Lynette is a clinical documentation education specialist with HC Pro and ACTIS. In this role, she is a full-time instructor for HC Pro bootcamps and Propel CDI services. She also serves as a subject matter expert for ACTIS. And Lynette has been a registered nurse for more than 20 years with extensive clinical background in emergency care as well as management of a level 4 trauma program. Before joining HC Pro, Lynette served as a clinical nurse educator specializing in advanced life support, and she is instrumental in establishing both auditor and educator roles within CDI programs. Over the course of her career, she has designed and delivered education for CDI specialists and providers alike, later advancing into leadership roles within CDI. And we are so happy that she joined the ACTIS team just a little while ago, and we are delighted to have her as a part of ACTIS now. Before I get started, though, with my question for you, Lynette, I did just want to remind everybody that you can claim 0.5 ACTIS CEUs for the first 4 days after posting, which can be used towards your CCDS or CCDSO recertification requirements. I will give you the information on how to claim at the end of the show, so stay tuned for that. And thank you so much for joining me today, Lynette. I'm excited to have you on your first ever ACTIS podcast.
Yes, thank you. I am so excited to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, and I'm excited that we are talking about problem list sequencing. Everybody knows the problem list is always a problem. So we're going to start with my first question. Could you please tell me a little bit about the problem list and explain also how are problems sequenced?
Oh my goodness, problem lists are always a problem.
They are.
Problem lists in the inpatient setting, they do differ from the outpatient setting. I say this because in the outpatient problem list, they need to be listed in a specific order. The first listed diagnosis in a problem list is generally the reason that the patient is being seen, whereas the inpatient setting diagnosis in the problem list can be pulled from previous visits, can be pulled from PCP visits. They can be listed randomly. We need to look at the thrust of the treatment and the inpatient setting to really determine what our principal diagnosis is. So in other words, the focus of the inpatient treatment will be your principal diagnosis, not the diagnosis listed first in that problem list or active problem list or whatever your organization may call them. Historically, problem lists was created to help providers document patients' chronic conditions that were often overlooked. So those chronic respiratory failure, chronic heart failure are the most common. And then this can create issues as they might lead to denials of secondary diagnoses captured or coded that are only listed in the problem list.
Of course, that makes sense. So does the problem list align with the principal diagnosis?
The problem list does not align with the principal diagnosis. It's not uncommon for providers to pull or copy-paste in problem lists from previous hospital or inpatient visits. So as you can imagine, those diagnoses may or may not be valid diagnoses for the current visit. So we, as the CDI specialists, need to evaluate and really look into those problem lists and scrutinize those diagnoses as to whether or not they are currently valid. This may require a query to the provider and clinically validate that diagnosis, rule out a diagnosis, or even rule in and garner greater specificity while you're at it, asking that query. So looking at that problem list and really looking at what diagnosis is on there and is that a current diagnosis.
So can you use the problem list to capture diagnoses?
Oh, that's a loaded question. it could be some coders will look at the problem list and say, absolutely not, I cannot code from there. Where others say, well, if this diagnosis is still valid and is currently being treated, then why wouldn't I capture it? So just because the diagnosis is listed on a problem list doesn't mean the provider actually addressed it during this encounter. So you may also see providers documenting something along the lines of see previous day's problem list or see previous day's notes. This may be acceptable for maybe one day progress note, but if at any time that treatment plan changes or a diagnosis is not in subsequent progress notes, only documented once, that may be subject to a denial based on the question of, did this diagnosis truly meet that criteria of a secondary diagnosis? We can't capture a diagnosis based on entries in the patient's history, only on a problem list or medication list. So it's those providers' responsibilities to clearly document how a condition is influencing that patient's current care and management during their specific encounter. Given the likelihood of increased scrutiny of physician billing in the future, CDI teams need to ensure that medical staff are informed and educate. Another issue we run into are those federal guidelines mandating that daily physician evaluation and management, so that E&M billing, is supported by clearly distinct documented assessments, referencing prior documentation with phrases like see previous day's note does not meet compliance standards and may be considered fraudulent if ever reviewed by the OIG or the Office of Inspector General.
Absolutely. Okay. So what are the most common problems you encounter and how do you address them?
The most common problem begin if the problem list isn't updated. It becomes really difficult to tell which conditions are associated with each admission. It can become very long. Many of those listed diagnoses may no longer pertain to the patient. A patient's historical problem list may vary across encounters and should not be assumed to apply universally. It is the attending physician's provider or the attending provider's responsibility to determine and document which diagnoses are relevant to that current visit or current admission. If a recurring condition is still clinically valid for a current encounter, then we need to make sure that those providers are documenting in that current visit for each inpatient visit that this is a current diagnosis, that it is still being monitored, evaluated, and treated. So looking at a diagnosis from a previous record without current documentation or physician confirmation is inappropriate and then may lead to inaccurate coding. A real easy example is a problem list that we see on the problem list is a patient's BMI instead of a diagnosis or a condition. So the providers do this to try to avoid having those offensive terms of obesity or morbid obesity in a patient's record, which flows into their patient portal. Some patients find this extremely insulting, and providers are sensitive to that situation. But the practice of just using a BMI and not an associated diagnosis can lead to non-compliant reporting. Or let's say the patient has lost weight between visits. that listed BMI is no longer applicable. So not only is it an inappropriate BMI, but there is also no associated diagnosis. So you can see that this creates quite a mess. Another example is where a provider documents dependence on ventilation in error when describing an acute condition or an acute situation. Then this gets coded. Then that condition is added to the patient's active problem list on discharge and can be inappropriately reported post-discharge. So due to that increased weighting in HCC risk adjustment, this is a ginormous audit target.
I see. So how can CDI professionals work with providers to educate them on the appropriate use of the problem list?
CDI teams need to work with their physician advisors or their physician champions with appropriate education. Ultimately, for conditions that should be resolved upon discharge, it is important for those discharging providers to update those problem lists in the discharge summary. If they would do this, it would prevent a diagnosis from being carried over to a patient's ambulatory list of active problems. If we can educate those providers to document a resolution of acute conditions at discharge, so these conditions don't pass to the patient's active problem or active chronic problem list, so these diagnoses are not used inadvertently post-discharge. Again, it's ideal to have the hospital active problem list updated at discharge, but we all know this does not occur 100% of the time.
Absolutely.
So we have this never-ending circle or a cycle of needing to clarify the problem list during that next inpatient visit. Another way we could combat this issue, it would be helpful if providers included the date of service on their diagnoses listed in the problem list, because otherwise it's unclear if the diagnosis is current, and this would eliminate some of that confusion, and they may not receive as many clinical validation queries for clarification. CDI teams also need to work with their providers, whether it's face-to-face, through their physician advisors or their physician champions, to help establish that good documentation practice that support these requirements in a consistent and concise manner. One approach that we like to use in educating providers is to use the acronym of DEEP, so D-E-E-P. So we have a diagnosis. What is that diagnosis? That etiology. What caused that diagnosis? Where did it originate? Why did it originate? So on. And then the evidence, provide that supporting evidence to support the diagnosis, and then plan. And I alluded to this a little bit earlier. So the plan is where MEAT comes in, M-E-A-T. So those of us who have been CDI for a while are really familiar with this one. So monitoring, evaluation, assessment, and treatment.
That's extremely good advice. Thank you. I'm going to shift a little bit, but I think this is important to consider when we're discussing. Does AI help or hinder the use of problem lists? Everybody's talking about AI. Many people have that involved in their daily work. So what role does AI do?
Yes, AI hinders and helps. AI... artificial intelligence, we need to validate, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, depends on kind of how you look at it. Just as I noted previously, clinical validation. So technology may flag a diagnosis that may be lacking appropriate clinical indicators or the diagnostic findings to support a diagnosis. The CDI specialists need to review or their review is an essential component to ensure the diagnoses are clinically supported, or do we need to get them ruled out or off the record? Let's say that a patient has is admitted for a fractured hip. They currently have pneumonia on a problem list, but since this isn't dated, really, is this pneumonia current for this encounter. So is that a pneumonia being treated as an inpatient? That patient was actually admitted for pneumonia 3 months prior. The current chest x-rays are clear. There's no antibiotics being prescribed. Vital signs, labs are normal. So that diagnosis of pneumonia that's on the problem list is not a valid diagnosis for this visit. So the CDI specialist needs to clinically validate that diagnosis. AI may pick that up as a valid diagnosis because it's listed in that problem, in the problem list. So if the CDI specialist believes the documentation could lead to incorrect coding, we need to send a query. It's also important to recognize software algorithms may apply criteria that differ from those used by providers or even the facility. For instance, a software may flag an abnormal electrolyte based on a threshold that's not shared by the organization or even individual facilities within an organization. Again, this needs to be critical thinking by the CDI specialist. So ultimately, you as the CDI specialist will want to look at the problem list. If that diagnosis is being monitored, evaluated, treated, you can capture it as a codable diagnosis. If not, query for clinical validation and don't forget to grab that greater specificity while you're at it. If ever in doubt, send out a query.
That's fantastic advice. We've come to the end of this conversation, but I really appreciate you sharing all that with us, Lynette. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much, Rebecca, for having me. Have a great day.
And now it's time for something completely different. It's the ACTIS Update, which is our regular segment featuring the latest news and what's going on inside the association. And I told you who my special guests were going to be today at the top of the program. So I am joined by Linnea, Carla, and Jess. And I want to thank you for joining me today on Guy Fawkes Night, or Bonfire Night, as we call it in England. The 5th of November is a very exciting day for us. And it's basically our Halloween type celebration. So we don't do a whole lot of Halloween celebrating in England because we have Guy Fawkes Night, which is when we have fireworks and people get together around bonfires, and it's all very exciting. So I won't ask you what you guys are doing to celebrate Bonfire Night, although I feel like we should institute that as an ACTIS holiday now that I've brought it up.
Do you guys dress up still on?
We don't. Yeah. No dressing up
for bonfires and
No, it's more about a community gathering. And it actually commemorates the fact that in 16 something or other, I never remember what that date is, Guy Fawkes tried to blow up the Houses of Parliament, which would have killed the king and thrown the country into disarray and chaos and civil war and all sorts of things like that. And the plot was foiled. And so people celebrated that and the fact that we had a continuance of stability by, for some reason, having bonfires and doing fireworks, because I guess all the gunpowder that was under the Houses of Parliament didn't go off and we didn't have a giant bonfire of our Houses of Parliament, which is where the Prime Minister sits. And back in those days, obviously, the King was more involved and stuff. So, yeah, it's a lot of good fun. But really, for us in England, it means having fireworks and joining friends around a bonfire and maybe having hot dogs and sausages and fun things like that.
Amazing. Well, thank you for sharing that bit of history with us, because that's not something I knew about.
Yeah, me either.
Well, The more you know.
When I was scheduled for a bonfire on a British holiday, I had to go there. But speaking of holidays and excitement, as we are getting ever closer to the ACTIS conference, which really is basically the ACTIS Association's national holiday, because it's a time when we all get together and we celebrate the profession. And we are thrilled to say that the agenda for 2026 is now available. Festival. So the links will be in the show notes and you can check it out anytime. But it is a very cool agenda for 2026. We're really proud of all the people who submitted really interesting, innovative and different sessions. And of course, we have our returning track, Clinical Encoding, which is just a vital part of the conference and such a great way to stay up to date with what's going on. We also have leadership and collaboration, and then a track on quality and denials management, which have such vital sessions in them. And then we're excited that for 2026, we have a new track, which is all about technology and analytics. So in that track, we're going to explore the use of AI and other technology and the relevance of that for CDI professionals and what you need to know and how you can use this data, the new technology and analytics to inform your best practices. And then the other new track is pediatrics and neonatology, which is such a growing area of CDI. So many of you are focusing on pediatrics and neonates now. So this track will have CDI guidance unique to the youngest members of our patient populations. And there's more than 70 speakers and 50 sessions, so there really is something for all backgrounds, all experience level, whether you are brand new to CDI or you've been practicing it for 20 years, there really is something for everybody. So do check it out, and we can't wait to see you at our national holiday starting in April next year in Chicago. And I'm going to pass it over to Carla because I know you have more exciting things to talk about related to the conference.
Yeah. So in addition to the agenda being posted, which is always so exciting, the events committee works so hard to whittle down to the sessions that make it to the agenda. So I'm always so pleased when we get to share that with everyone. We're also accepting poster applications for display at the 2026 conference. So posters detail something exciting happening at your organization, whether it's an innovative project, a successful educational outreach, a newly established protocol or initiative, something interesting that you're doing that you think other CDI specialists want to hear about, you get the chance to explain that in a poster, which then gets displayed in our exhibit hall. It's very science fair style. You can walk from poster to poster, seeing what's going on in CDI across the country. And it's perfect if you were thinking about submitting to speak, but you missed the deadline, or you're just looking to get your feet wet, not quite ready to get up on the stage for an hour and looking for maybe a little bit something on the smaller scale. It's just a great way to engage with your CDI community and share best practices, share successes, how you've overcome obstacles, etc. And additionally, as our thanks for your contribution, you'll get $200 off conference admission. That's one person per selected poster. Just again, as a thank you for participating and to help share this education with other CDI professionals. The application is really easy and it's open through December 12th. So I know it sounds like you've got a lot of time, but with the holidays coming up, it's going to sneak up on you. But again, you can fill out the application in as little as 5 or 10 minutes. So I do encourage you to take a look at it sooner rather than later. We would absolutely love to receive your submission and to hopefully see you in Chicago.
Absolutely. The posters are such a great part of the conference. So I can't wait to see those applications.
It's super interesting to see what other people are doing. I love it. And another part of the conference that I love is that we present awards to members of the CDI community in a special ceremony during the event. So currently, to prepare for that, we're accepting nominations for our 4 awards, again, through December 12th. That is the key date to remember, December 12th. So I really encourage you to think about the people you work with and how you might recognize a peer for their accomplishments or for how they've inspired you or empowered members of the team. We'll be offering 4 awards in 2026, the CDI Professional of the Year Award, which is designed to recognize someone who's just the consummate CDI professional, everything that all CDI professionals aspire to in their careers. It's someone that's been here for the long haul. They've got more than 10 years of experience in the industry, and it really is our top honor. We're also accepting nominations for the Accomplishment in CDI Award, which recognizes someone that has made significant contributions to the profession, but maybe hasn't been in it as long as, say, the CDI Professional of the Year. And then we have the Diversity in CDI Award, which recognizes a department or a team that's really going above and beyond to make CDI an inclusive place for people at their organizations. And then lastly, we have the Melissa Varnavas Spirit of Service Award, which honors our late colleague, Melissa, who was so passionate about serving the CDI community that we like to offer this award to those who share her passion and her dedication to helping others and giving back to the CDI community. So we are very excited to offer all four of those awards in 2026. I encourage you to think about someone who's made an impact on your CDI career and nominate them for one of our awards so that we can all recognize them together. And do be sure to get your application in, or your nomination, I'm sorry, in by December 12th.
Thanks, Carla. I'll just jump in next.
Yes, please.
Yeah. So besides recognizing these accomplishments of our seasoned CDI professionals here at ACTIS, we also want to support the professional development of future leaders and change makers. So I want to talk about the ACTIS scholarship applications, which are open right now. Each year, the Furthering Education Committee and I are able to award four different scholarships, which assist CDI professionals who need support accessing educational opportunities but have a passion for learning. And so, like I said, these applications are open, and we have four scholarship awards that we will be giving to people. And first, the Introduction to CDI Scholarship is an award that includes a one-year ACTIS membership, as well as enrollment in the ACTIS CDI Apprenticeship Program. And then second, the Professional Development Scholarship. And this award gives the recipient registration to an online CDI boot camp of their choice. Third, the Pre-Conference Scholarship. With this award, you can receive registration to the ACTIS Symposium Outpatient CDI or to the Physician Advisor Forum, which both occur just before the National Conference on April 19th through 20th in Chicago next year. And last, but certainly not least, the Melissa Varnavas Scholarship. And this recipient will receive registration to the next ACTIS National Conference, as we've been talking about, which takes place April 20th through the 23rd, 2026, again in Chicago. So if you're a CDI professional with a passion for learning, but you struggle to get support for those opportunities for learning, I highly encourage you to get working on your application now for this. Or if you know of someone who would benefit, help us get the word out. Applications will be open until November 23rd, and that's even closer than December 12th. So get going on that if you are interested. The application does ask for a letter of recommendation, and we do look for thought-out answers. So just don't wait and get to our website where you can review the application and eligibility requirements under the Free Resources tab. And we'll also make sure to include a link for that in today's show notes.
There is so much happening right now.
Seriously.
And so many exciting things. The scholarship is such a wonderful opportunity to get access to education and learning opportunities that maybe you wouldn't have access to ordinarily. So I would definitely encourage people to apply for that or spread the word. You know, if you're a leader at your organization and you think to yourself, hey, there's somebody who's kind of newer on their career path, they would really benefit from a boot camp, but we haven't had the budget to send them, like maybe suggest they apply for a scholarship. It's a great opportunity for them. And in the spirit of there's always more things going on, it is hard to believe, but the final edition of the CDI Journal for 2025 just published a few days ago as well. That is the November-December edition. The topic was quality and health equity, and it included a whole slew of fascinating articles as usual. First, Jess and our associate editor, Joshua Raposa, wrote articles on social determinants of health, diversity, equity, equity and inclusion in CDI, CDI's impact on HEDIS measures, the outpatient quality measures, and deepening quality reviews generally. As always, those articles that we write internally for the journal are based on research and also conversations with industry professionals on the front lines of CDI. So it's a great way to learn from your peers, sort of indirectly through the journal, but it's a way for our members to share their expertise more broadly than their particular organization. Plus, we do have a number of articles by contributing writers for this edition, including an article from our very own education specialist, Kelly Rice, on social determinants of health, as well as articles on problem list sequencing, which is very appropriate for today's podcast episode, streamlining CDI workflows, navigating the 2026 IPPS final rule that took effect on October 1st, and CDI encoder collaboration. I'm always really impressed by the depth and breadth of the knowledge on display in each edition of the journal, and this one is really no different. And I do hope that our ACTUS members listening today will take a few minutes to go and give that edition a read, and of course claim your one ACTUS CEU by taking the accompanying quiz to that edition. It's a great way to bump up your CEU count there. And as is always the case with our editorial calendar, we never rest on our laurels long. We are already looking forward to our next edition of the journal, which is going to publish in January of 2026. The topic for that edition will be provider engagement and interdepartmental collaboration, and the deadline to submit your articles will be December 1st of this year. We will, of course, include a link in the show notes to that submission form and also to the full list of 2026 journal topics so that you can start planning your writing year ahead with us. We really cannot wait to read your articles in the coming year, and there's a lot of really great topics planned for the upcoming year, so make sure you take a look at that.
Absolutely. The CDI Journal is such a great resource, and it's an easy way to stay up to date with what's happening in the CDI profession. And it always amazes me the different types of articles that I get to read in the journal. So it's so exciting. And I can't believe that we've already completed this year. So it'll be great to see what's coming up in 2026. Well, with that, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our group chat segment of this podcast. As always, you can find the link for more information and everything we talked about in today's show notes. And Linnea, Carla, and Jess, thank you so much for joining me. And before we completely run out of time today, I have to let you know about the 0.5 ACTUS CEUs you can claim. You can use these for either CCDS or CCDSO credentials, whichever you have. But you must listen to the show in the first 4 days from the date of publication. To receive that 0.5 CEU, you go to the show page on ACTUS.org. You click on the ACTUS podcast link under the free resources tab. You then click on today's episode from the list on that page, scroll down to the recording, and click play. Once you've listened to the whole of the video, like when the timer gets to zero, that's when the link to the CEU evaluation will appear. You do have to take that evaluation, and then your certificate will be automatically emailed to you once you submit it. Those instructions are all on the show page, so never fear, you can find anything that you want there. And we do always recommend, often we do find that PDFs can get caught in an organization's spam filters. So it's always a good idea to use a personal email address to make sure that you do get your CEU. The cutoff for today's episode is Sunday, November 9th at 11 p.m. Eastern. After that, the CEU period does close, but never fear, we always have another episode. They come around just like clockwork every 2 weeks. With that, I do need to conclude today's episode. We'll be back in 2 weeks on Wednesday, November 19th. Gosh, that is startlingly close to Thanksgiving. That'll be an exciting new episode hosted by ACTUS's Associate Editorial Director, Linnea Archibald. Don't miss out on reminders about these wonderful podcasts by making sure that you are subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, CDI Strategies. We always include a link to the new podcast when it's available, so it's a great way to stay up to date with everything that's going on at ACTUS. You never miss any resources. You can listen to this show anytime on the ACFIS website or via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your favorite podcast app may be. All the links we discussed during today's episode will be available in the show notes, so they'll be really easy to find. As always, we do appreciate it if you could take a minute to leave us a 5-star review on your podcast app, which does help others find our show. Our intro and outro music is Media Noche by D. Yankee, and our ad music is Take Me Higher by Jazzar, both of which are obtained from the Free Music Archive. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics, just send us an email at info@actus.org. With that, take care, stay safe on Bonfire Night. I hope you learned something that you weren't expecting to today, and we will see you next time.